Hello and welcome to another edition of The Measuring Post. Joe Massa here, in a place where we can learn and grow together. And I've got another very special guest for us today. Probably the most buff guest I've ever had on this show. Somebody that's been in the industry for a long time, not only in the media industry. We'll talk about all that in a minute. He's a high-performance coach. Even his children are performing at a very high level. I'll let you tell him about his son in just a little bit as well, because I think it's a really cool piece of information about him. But for now, welcome Mr. Corey Disson to The Measuring Post. How are you today, sir?
Joe, thank you for having me, man. This is going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to dig in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're no stranger to the microphone or broadcasting / podcasting in general. You've obviously had over 30 years in media production before transitioning into coaching. But sort of give me a high level background. What got Corey on the path to coaching, media, just sort of where you at in life and where'd you come from?
Oh, boy. Do we have enough time? I will try to condense that down as best I can for you. I mean, I spent 3 decades in running a national broadcast production studio based in the Philadelphia market. I was very fortunate to be at the right place at the right time, and I met a man by the name of Paul Turner when I was 19 years old. Most folks might not be familiar with the name, but they've heard his voice. He was the national voice of the Howard Stern Show from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s. And he had a little production company, which was basically him. He had Paul Turner Productions. And I happened to be at the right place at the right time. And he and I got along well. And I said, I'll do whatever I can to learn the business and to hang out with you. And he just sort of gave me the keys to the studio and allowed me to teach myself how to produce audio. And that turned into being hired as his producer, being hired as his manager, running his production studio, becoming the general manager, hiring more producers, administrators, salespeople. He left the business in 2003. I stayed on with the company until 2020. And, you know, by the time I left the company, you know, we were producing 600 to 700 projects a month for clients all around the world. Obviously, we worked with Howard for a long time. We worked with, the Philadelphia 76ers for a long time. Monster Jam, Disney on Ice, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. I could name a who's who of, you know, pay-per-view boxing events that we did all the TV and radio commercials for. So I spent a long time, casting talent, editing audio, running a studio. And, I'm sure we'll get into, how I transitioned out of that business to do what I'm doing now. But, I thank my lucky stars that that's where I got my bones.
Yeah, it's a really cool story and background. And obviously working with a name like Howard Stern and the Philadelphia 76ers, those are some good name drops, by the way. But no doubt. huge ability to launch from a platform of that magnitude and that size. And obviously, is that something that you kind of wanted to get into, or did it just, you happen to fall into it by meeting Paul?
Well, I knew originally I wanted to be on the air. I wanted to be Howard, but then, what had happened was, I'll rewind a little bit. When I was a kid, 14, 15 years old, my best friend, his father worked in community television. Nothing very sexy, but in small market suburban Georgia, where I grew up, he worked at the local community TV, local access station. And my buddy said, "Hey, why don't you sleep over? And then tomorrow morning, we're going to go on a video shoot with my dad." And I was like, "Ooh, that sounded cool. Lights, camera, action. Sign me up. Let's do it, brother." And, I went and I watched. And, my little job was to make bologna sandwiches for the crew. That was my introduction to broadcast production. But from that point on, I sort of got the bug that I wanted to be in the media, television, film, something like that. So that, sort of slingshotted me in that direction. I ended up going to Temple University. I got a degree in what was called RTF, radio, TV, film, or as we used to like to joke, rather than fail. And that's, while I was at Temple University, that's where I met Paul. And when I interned at the radio station where Paul was based out of, Infinity Broadcasting, WYSP Radio and Infinity Broadcasting, 2 weeks into my internship, the entire AIR staff was fired. And I got a bad habit, Joe. I like to eat 3 times a day. I'm a big fan of stability. And when I saw that someone could snap their fingers, and whether it was ratings or money, whatever the reason, your on-air job could be gone, I said, what's the next best thing? And that was the production room. You know, I liked all the lights, and at the time it was tape machines. All that stuff was very sexy to me. And I'm like, man, if I can figure out how to do this, yeah, I didn't know it was going to be a 30-year career at that time, but I knew it was a good opportunity, and I was going to do everything I could to take advantage of it.
As a fellow radio person, I wholeheartedly agree and understand that. Magic wand can be waved and everybody's job is gone. I've been unfortunate enough to be laid off several times. And it is, that's honestly what made me get out of radio back in the mid-2010s. I still do work in radio, but I do it more on a production side, as you mentioned. Sure. And sure. We started a podcast, not only this one, but I run a podcast network, because you're in much more control of your destiny at that point. So I know that broadcasting, and you use the right words, it is a sexy job. I loved being on the air. It was one of the best, most fun times of my life. But again, the money wasn't great, especially as technology got better and everything got syndicated. But on top of that, it was really unstable. And I still see guys and gals that I worked with that were much further in their career than I was, even when I worked with them. And they're still market to market to market to market, hopping all over to little stations all over the country. And, you know, as a family man and a guy, again, who's looking for some stability, and this isn't to discredit or discourage anyone from getting into the business, but just be aware that it's a two-sided, two-edged sword for definitely a lack of a better term.
Yeah, that market to market scenario was not something that I was hip to do. My story is unique in that, you know, I got my start in market number 5, Philadelphia. Nobody starts market number 5. You start at the bottom of the barrel at some, you know, market 210 or whatever in the middle of nowhere, and you work your way up. Like I said, right place, right time, met the right people. I mean, Paul Turner obviously was a central figure, another guy. You know, you're a radio guy. You probably heard the name Tim Sabian. Tim Sabian's a legendary programmer. It was Howard Stern's programmer. He programmed at K-Rock in New York and YSP in Philly and JFK in D.C. Was at Westwood One, Sirius XM, the whole thing. He's one of my longest industry friend, mentors. You know, he was the guy who brought me in, you know, and at 19 years old, and gave this dumb as a box of rocks kid a chance. And I didn't even know how influential he was at the time when I met him. I just thought I was meeting the program director, whoever that was. That's how dumb I was. And, I said to him, and he can quote me on it. I said, hey man, if I have to clean the bathrooms with a toothbrush, I will do whatever it takes to work here. So he gave me my first little gig before I even got in partnership with Paul. You know, I had to answer the phone lines for the public affairs programming on Sunday morning at 5 a.m. You know, you being a radio guy, you should be well aware how that works. The FCC mandates that programming happens. And I was bouncing at a bar, you know, on Saturday night till 3 a.m., go home, take a quick shower, quick nap, drive all the way back to the city to be answering phones to these knuckleheads that call in at 5 a.m. And I got paid a grand total of $0 for that privilege. But it was because I kind of nibbled on the S sandwich, as they say, at the time, that made it that much easier for me to be given the opportunity to do more lucrative things.
Yeah, it definitely happens that way. I was the traditional path. I ended up, my first on-air radio job was in Winter, South Dakota, which is a town about the size of my basement. And then ended up coming back to Denver, where I'm from originally, which is a top 20 market. We're number 19 currently, and have spent the last 20 years or 18 years in this market. And again, been blessed to not have to do market to market. But again, a lot of that was due to the fact that I kind of took more control of my destiny and didn't allow myself to to be forced to go to different markets. But I love the mentality that you have. And I know that we're going to talk more about that into your shift into coaching. Sure. But it's that, hey, I will do what it takes. I will start at the bottom. I'll clean the toilets. I'll answer the phones at 5 a.m. That's really what you have to do in this particular industry. But that translates to any part of your life. You have to be willing to do the work that no one will do. And you have to be able to do it with a smile on your face, even if you hate it. Because then when something does come up, you're the one that's going to be the considered for that role. Because they go, man, Corey's the guy that's here every single day. He doesn't complain. He does his work, and he does it with a smile. Those are the people that get hired and move up. So definitely, if you take nothing else from that conversation today, take that. But yeah, tell us about your shift into coaching after the media world. Like, obviously, you've made this great name for yourself in the coaching space. You were also an author. I'll let you share about your book in a moment. But tell us the shift to coaching and where you started and where you're at now.
So, you know, after being involved in the production business, at the time it was around 25 years in, around 2018, I kind of knew that I didn't want to buy the company. I was the vice president of the company. I had every perk. I had the awesome salary. I could come and go as I pleased. I worked from home before it was cool and before it was a thing. I had all of the, I had a great setup, worked with great people, but I wasn't feeling very fulfilled. Quite honestly, because there's nowhere else I could go. I mean, I had a nice staff of people underneath me, and it was just getting a little old doing the same thing day after day. And I always need to have a little mission. That's just how I'm wired. So you had that kind of going in one direction, meaning my unfulfillment with my career at the time. And then in another area, my youngest son, pretty accomplished high school baseball player. He was getting, you know, recruited by D1 colleges at age 15, had an opportunity to go pro out of high school and didn't. That was in 2020. But we knew that when he got out of high school, he was probably not going to be living in the same zip code as me. And I'll be damned if I was going to miss any of his games. So I needed to figure out a way to still earn a living and not be chained to a brick and mortar building or a zip code. I needed the freedom to go wherever I want, because if he's playing at home and wherever that school is, I want to be there. If they're on a road trip, I wanted to follow him there, etc. So I devised something that I later coined, didn't call it at the time, but looking back, called my Shawshank plan. If you've seen the movie The Shawshank Redemption, it's very much, you know, very similar. You know, what could I do quietly in the background, which wouldn't interrupt the normal flow of things, wouldn't compete with the production business? And everybody said, well, Core, why don't you go be an agent or be somebody's manager or open up your own production company? You know, look, I built that company with my own two hands. It sounds very cliche, and had a lot of great people that worked for me. And while I'm a pretty shrewd and cutthroat businessman, I'm not a jerk, and I didn't want to pull the rug out from underneath all these people that were young and had their own families that they're starting. They're just getting married. They're just having kids. Because if I left and I opened up a competing business, I would sink them inside of a year, because the majority of the clients were there because of me. I brought them in. So anywho, I said, what can I do that wouldn't compete, that could give me the freedom to work from anywhere? And that was, I saw there was a need for voice talent learning how to market themselves. I could see the agent model starting to die on the vine. Social media was starting to boom. And voice talent, although they were very good at their craft, they weren't good at operating a voiceover business. So I said, I'm going to really drill down on this niche. And I'm going to start offering voiceover talent the opportunity, teach them how to use the tools to market themselves. And I you know, two clients turned into five. Five turned into 10. 10 turned into 20. And then, you know, fast forward to 2020, the spring, summer of 2020, I had enough coaching business that I was earning the same amount of money that I was with my full-time salary. And I said, oh, this is it. So in July of 2020, I walked away cold. I said, I'm done with, you know, running a production company. I dove headfirst full-time into being a coach, and I've been doing that ever since. And thank goodness, you know, that business has fed me quite nicely to the extent that I'm semi-retired for the last 5 years. I maybe work 20 hours a week. I do a certain amount of sessions with clients now. The coaching business spawned a design business that I own. I don't do it. I don't do the design, but I have, you know, folks that create websites and social graphics and logos, and we do virtual admin for clients, you know, help with their social media and whatnot. And that's what's paying the bills now. So like that when you take my unfulfillment and my son's athletic journey, those are the two reasons why I created this coaching business.
I love it. I love the ability to step away from what makes the most sense. You know, that's a really hard thing to do, to have something steady and stable and walk away from it. But you had a vision, and the vision led you to what you're doing now, and I commend you for that. That's really cool. But I do have a question, because Shawshank Redemption, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Sure.
By the way, if you've never seen it, greatest prison movie ever.
No doubt.
What was the motivation? Is it the get busy living, get busy dying, or you were quietly building or breaking a hole in your wall to escape? What was the motivation for the name?
Well, I mean, you know, crawling through, you know, 500 yards of sewage to your freedom, it was just, it really illustrated my journey and what I tell anyone that I work for, is that if you want to get what you want, you have to be able to make sacrifices. You have to endure pain. You have to be patient. You have to keep your head down and your mouth shut. There's a lot of people talking about what they're going to do instead of showing what they've done. And all of that stuff, like every time I watch Shawshank Redemption, I go, oh my God, that's my life. That's what I teach people. You know, like I said, I didn't wake up one day and go, I'm going to create a Shawshank plan. I noticed it after the fact how similar it was, because I'm in the trenches with clients, helping them get unstuck, helping them break through self-doubt and procrastination. You start to understand that the prison that Andy Dufresne was sentenced to is very much the same type of prison an entrepreneur or any other professional is locked into when they're, you know, shackled by, I can't afford it, or I don't have time, or I'm not ready. Those are the common things that we fight against all the time when I'm coaching my clients. And if you can develop a plan, you can overcome all of that stuff.
I love the symbolic name and nature of that. That's a beautiful idea. And again, greatest movie ever in the prison world. So without sharing any like clients' names or specific details, what are some of the sort of best success stories you've had from your coaching, these individuals, helping them get unstuck and figure out the path to that freedom that we talk about?
I mean, there's literally over 200 of them. And there's a lot, simply like I had zero social media presence. Now I have 5,000 followers, and I can create content campaigns, and those content campaigns and my followers and my engagement, that's my pipeline to generate business. That happens over and over and over again. But, you know, specifically, you know, I've had clients, one I can think of off the top of my head. He ran a big ad agency for years, was down on his luck. He left that business. He started a couple other businesses that didn't go anywhere. And, you know, we got him introduced to another agency just to go in there as an account executive. I said, give it time. You're going to buy that agency. You're going to own it. And then he literally started on the ground floor again. And then at the same time, I said, you know what? You have this personality that you can wrap a personal brand around, and you can market and start teaching people how to do what you do. Literally over steaks and whiskey one night, we had this conversation and we drilled down on a brand name for him and what he should start doing, being a talking head on social media. And, you know, you fast forward and now the guy has got a multi-million-dollar coaching business. He owns that agency that he started working for. And he's killing it. The guy's absolutely killing it. He's a content machine. He's got a massive national following. I mean, he's a nice feather in my cap. Hell, Paul Turner hired me back
to help, you know, just stuff with his, you know, website and branding and how to use some of the social media tools. You know, I could go on and on. Other coaches hire me, life coaches, social media coaches, because when people get connected to me, it's sort of unavoidable, my presence, and they want to know how to create that for themselves. And I just literally show them what I did.
Yeah, and I love your philosophy because it's really simple. The core pillars are consistency, discipline, action over perfection, and then investing in yourself without apology. And it seems like those are very basic things that everybody should do by nature, but very, very rare, actually, especially the last one, which is investing in yourself. People always consider themselves an afterthought and like, I've got to give everything I have to bills and to friends and family. And it's never like, hey, I need to reinvest not only in myself monetarily, but with like your health, getting in shape, or your long-term wealth, retirement accounts, or reinvesting back into a business that you start. It's always like, I made $30, I got to give $30, but never a reinvestment. So I love that that's one of your pillars that you teach. Do you find that people struggle with any one of those pillars more than others? Or am I kind of hitting the nail on the head there with that one?
Well, I mean, look, a big one that is just chronic is consistency. You know, someone who either ventures into a coaching arrangement with me or even another coach, or they obtain some valuable information. They get the information, they're fired up, and they rock it out of the gates. And then when the honeymoon is over, the implementation of the information weans to nothing. So maintaining, you know, most folks will try to put some arbitrary deadline on whatever new system, process, information they purchase needs to work. They talk about ROI, right? You know, what's my return on investment? Well, I would say ROI stands for rate of implementation. It's as good as how much you implement it. And, you know, there's for your listeners, and I don't know if you ever heard of something called the Stonecutter's Credo. It was written by a man by the name of Jacob Wiis, W-I-I-S. You can Google that. And in essence, I'm going to paraphrase, and I hope I don't butcher the Stonecutter's Credo word for word. But, you know, this was written in the, 1910s. You know, he said, you know, basically when he's sort of stumped or he's at these moments of crisis, he observes a stonecutter doing his work. And the stonecutter hits the rock 100 times and it doesn't split. But on the 101st blow, it does. But it was not the 101st blow that made it split. It was the 100 that came before it. That is the inspiration for a lot of what I teach. You have to be willing to go to that 101st blow. Most people quit after 5 or 10 or 16 or whatever it is. You have to go until it's done. And I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but you know, consistency is tough. You know, as far as investing in yourself, a lesson that I learned, look, I'm a coach, but I've worked with coaches. I would be a hypocrite if I didn't, because I believe in coaching. You need to go to someone that has done what you want to do to learn from that person. And I worked with a guy for 3.5 years, a gentleman by the name of Dana Cavalia. It's another name that may be anonymous, but if I tell you where his background is, your ears will perk up because I know you're a sports guy. He was the strength and conditioning coach for the New York Yankees for 12 years. So he was working with guys like, Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit, et cetera, et cetera. Those were the people who he saw every day for 12 years. And he coached me one-on-one. And one of the lessons he taught me was you have to put yourself first. And most people, when you tell them, put yourself first, their default knee-jerk reaction is, well, that's selfish. I got to take care of my family. I got to take care of my kids. I got to take care of my employees. But you find out putting yourself first is actually the most unselfish thing you can do, because you put yourself in a position to create longevity for those people. To be around in a quality way for your spouse, for your children, for your employees, for your friends. And when he unlocked that from me, I took it very literally. I woke up at 3 a.m. to go work out. I still get up at 4 in the morning now. I've worked out twice today. Just today, I worked out twice already to keep myself in shape at, you know, going on 53 years old. And I outlift guys half my age in these gyms because I want to keep myself physically fit and strong and sharp to take care of my family, to take care of my wife. Even though we're an empty nest, my kids are out of the house, I still want to be around and be sharp for them. And I have, you know, my family be proud of me too.
Yeah, great advice. And again, you're absolutely right. If you don't put yourself in that position to be healthy and to stick around, you know, you're leaving things to chance then. If you're not there to lead your family or your business, someone's going to step in for you and might not be the way you would have wanted it done. So love that. I love looking at just, you know, following you on Instagram and looking at your fitness journey and everything you do there. It's very inspiring. I definitely am a fitness enthusiast and I'm trying to get to your level, brother. So I did only had one workout today, but hey, I'll try to get in an evening session to make you proud.
There you go.
So I know you wrote a book too. Tell me about this book, Going the Distance. And obviously that's a play on your name, your last name, Disson.
Yep.
And it was a 2023 book, correct?
Correct. You know, 10 rounds to a championship life and career. It's a love letter, my man. It's a love letter. It's a love letter to my family. It is a love letter to the people whose shoulders I stood on to get me here. I didn't want to just send a card in the mail. I didn't want to just tell folks how much they meant to me. I wanted to document it for the world to see that, you know, because of how much I love and respect these people and because the lessons that they taught me could be valuable for you as well. And I wanted to package them in a way that could be easily digestible and cool for people to absorb. So I wrapped the several stories and anecdotes around these 10 people and how the lessons they taught me sort of interlocked, and I stacked them and used them, and I share real world, real life experiences where these life lessons came into play. And then another big reason I wrote the book was legacy. My old man, who was one of the guys I wrote a chapter about, who recently passed a couple of months ago, he was very big on legacy, and I wanted my two sons to know where their old man came from and what made me, me, so that helps to shape them. So they each have a copy, of course, but it's out in the ecosystem, you know, for it. Hopefully it'll live on long, you know, beyond me, but it's something that I always wanted to do, to sort of pass on a lot of these nuggets that I've been so fortunate to have picked up over the years.
And I really love this. And I got to say, I was just reaching for something over here because I wasn't fully sure what your book was about. I thought it was a little bit more about your coaching program. But in 2018 or 2019, I also wrote a book. It's called My Heart to Yours. And it was exactly what you just said. It's about my children. So the goal was, in 2018, my cousin, who I was very close to, he was in a car accident and passed away. And it was one of those scenarios where, like, we all feel invincible, but life, just like that, can be gone.
No doubt.
So I wrote this book. At the time, my kids were much smaller. My son just moved to college. My daughter's in middle school. But if I were to pass tomorrow from something unexpected, what would I want my kids to know? What would I want them to remember, or what lessons would I want them to be aware of that I maybe didn't have a chance to teach them? And I go through a bunch of famous lessons and quotes from different people throughout history that I respected, that shaped me. And, you know, hearing you explain what that book was about, it just, like, made my heart very happy, because I'm like, okay, clearly what I wrote about was a great idea. Other people are doing similar things. And it's such a reward to be able to leave something like that for your kids. And, you know, even as they get older, and now that, you know, they don't need some of these lessons, which were more based on my younger family. Like,
sure,
what does my 7-year-old daughter need to know that maybe my 18-year-old daughter wouldn't look back on and find as valuable? But I love that you put your family in a position to learn from what you are and what made you who you are. So again, that's an awesome book. I'm definitely going to get a copy of that one.
Well, cool. You let me know, and positive reviews are welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm assuming we can find that on Amazon or anywhere.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And you can go right to my website and order right from the website, too. But let me
be clear. That's CoreyDisson.com, by the way. We'll put links around this.
Let me be clear. I love to sell some books. I didn't write the book to make money. Let me be clear. I wrote the book to put a good message out there and as a leave behind for my children. The few dollars I've made on the books is great. And I say that in quotes. I've been very fortunate to sell some books, but the point was to get the message out and to be able to talk about it. Because like I said, the lessons you learn, if you just paid attention to them, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I'm glad, because my book sales have not done very well, but I didn't really promote it a whole lot. Again, I agree. It was more for what it was. It was meant to be a gift to my children. It's called My Heart to Yours, dedicated to them. So when there was never a big marketing push, I probably should have done better. But again, positive reviews for both are welcome, but go to his first, because he's with me. You know, he's here on my show.
There you go.
So lighthearted, beyond all the work, beyond everything you do, you know, what drives you outside of work? Obviously, you're a big fan of watching your son's baseball. You never told us, by the way. I already know because we've had a conversation. Where does your son play now? What team is he working with now?
Well, up until this moment, because anything can change with the wind, he is employed by the Philadelphia Phillies. He is in the minor leagues for them. He was drafted in 2022, and he's finishing up his fourth full season. And, you know, we'll see how things go. He's at the high A level. He's had a couple of cups of coffee in double A over the past 2 years, which is nice. But it's a rough business. I mean, he works his tail off. We're very proud of him. And, you know, we've had the conversation more than once. Hey, man, if your career ended today, you're one of a tiny sliver of minority of people that have gotten a chance to do what he's done, to do something that he loves, that he's passionate about, and to get paid for it by a Major League Baseball team is just insane. And go figure, I'm from Philadelphia, and the kid gets drafted by the Phillies. It's crazy.
I'm sure that was that warmed your heart by itself, just being a hometown kid.
You know, leading up to, the draft that year, it was really down to four teams that were really saying, hey, we're going to draft your son. It was the Yankees, the Mets, the Rangers, and the Phillies. Sparing you the entire story, it got to be day three of the draft, and the Phillies basically say, hey, look, we're gonna pick him in the 11th or the 12th. This is what we're going to give him as a signing bonus. Are you cool with that? And, you know, we said, yeah, that's great. And then about an hour later, our agent was sitting in our living room. He gets a text. He goes, here we go. And 5 minutes later, they announced his name as being the 362nd overall pick
in the draft, nice,
which is tattooed on my hand.
That's awesome. Yeah, and you're right. It is such an accomplishment, but such a small group of individuals in such a cutthroat, very competitive game like baseball. And you would think there are so many teams, but there are very few spots on those teams that people can get drafted to. So obviously, even being in the minor leagues under that umbrella of the Philadelphia Phillies, such an accomplishment. So that is tremendous, and congratulations to him on that.
It's fun. Well, to answer your question about, you know, what do I do for fun, I guess you were asking.
Yeah, outside of work.
I'm a pretty simple fella. I mean, the first thing you have to understand for me to answer that question properly is what my North Star is. My North Star is something called QTL. QTL stands for quality time left. I don't know how long I'm going to be here, you know, and I'm certainly not wasting a moment. And the quality time left is with my wife and my kids. I have coffee with my wife every morning. I have dinner with my wife every day. I work from home. We spend hours and hours with each other. Thank goodness we're happily married 25 years and we get along, but that drives me. That is my fun time. Even, you know, we go to the beach or we go to the pool or I take her out shopping or whatever just to hang and we do our thing. You know, that's my partner in crime. But what I do for my own sanity, totally, you know, dovetails right into the brand and the business is I spend time at the gym. We talk about that. That's my fun. I'm not a big TV watcher. I watch my share of movies here and there. We talked about Shawshank. I'll watch The Godfather 100 million times. I love that movie too. But I go to the gym. I start preparing for the gym the night before. All of my gear is out. All of my clothes is out. My meal I prepare. You know, I go to the gym at 5, and there before it opens at 5, you know, when the lights go on, the door unlocks, I'm the first one in there. I get my first workout done. I come home, I eat, do a little work. Then I'm usually back in there 8:30 for another workout. That's where I like to be. I just enjoy being around it. I enjoy the challenge. You know, I enjoy the pain and the struggle and the pump and all that good stuff. That's where I like to be. But I don't have any crazy hobbies or anything else. You know, I just right now it's just all about spending time with my kids, my wife, and getting swole.
I love it. Hey, simple life sometimes the way to go. There's another great book, if you've never read it, The Art of Subtraction. We always find ourselves in these modes where it's consume, buy, purchase, get more and more, bigger house, more clothes, more toys. The art, keeping things simple, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. Sometimes is such an easier, more fruitful life to live. And I agree. I there's nothing special about what I do. I don't have any crazy hobbies. I like to be with my friends and family and wife. Same thing. I think we live very similar lifestyles. But if you were meeting someone today for the very first time, what is one practical piece of advice you would give them that they could implement today that would to get them on the path to being that 10 championship rounds of success?
The first thing they should do is invest in the most cost-effective organizational tool ever invented. Do you know what that is?
I do not. I'm assuming it's yourself.
I'm going to show it to you. It's that.
The mighty pen.
It's a pen. I talk about documenting with discipline. D-I-S-S. Discipline. Write things down. You're going to get something done that day. Write it down first. Don't try to impress me with your memory. You're not going on Jeopardy. You're trying to get things done. I write lists. I have lists for lists. If there's a camera over my shoulder and you saw what I'm looking at, I have sticky notes strewn about. I have paper lists over. I have lists on my phone. I don't have to remember anything because I've documented it when it came to my mind the first time. If you write something down and then you get it done and cross it off, you are creating a pattern of accomplishment. No matter how small or granular the task is, making your bed, washing the dishes, doing the laundry, going to the gym, putting up social media posts, growing your network. If you write it down, then cross it off, and then you see it, you know you accomplished something that day, and you set the tone for being productive in everything else that you do. So this costs maybe a dime, and it's the neatest thing. You take this little cover off, and then you turn it upside down, and when you wiggle it, cool stuff comes out, and then you become productive. So there's my simple advice for you. Invest in a pen, write things down. You know, stop trying to impress us with your memory because it ain't working.
I love it. And that takes me to also the momentum that it builds. When you do cross those things off, it is like a hit of dopamine. It's rewarding when you go, something done, something done. 100%. And that was the old army drill sergeant, and I forget who said it, but you mentioned it. The get up in the morning and make your bed, the very first thing. That should be your first thing ever.
In the Navy.
Yeah. Admiral.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so true, right? Because you're starting with a small win. And if you get a first win, the second win comes easier and so on. And then you snowball into this, you know, goal-crushing, productive member of society.
It's the tasks are not complicated. Doing them consistently is ridiculously hard. And if you write them down, you don't have to think about that. Eventually, there are certain tasks that become like brushing your teeth. I don't write down that I brush my teeth every day. You just do it. I don't write down make my bed or fold the laundry or take the trash out or do my social media post. Those things are automatic. But, you know, for obviously bigger tasks and bills that have to be paid and appointments with great podcasters, those things get written down. So there is no forgetting. And, you know, I can't look, when we're done, I'm crossing you off my list. I mean, like, boom, I knock something else out. I'm feeling good. You can't lose by writing things down. It's amazing how many people I talk to that don't do that.
Yeah, and that takes me back to one of our earlier points in the conversation. My very first on-air radio job, as I mentioned, was in Winter, South Dakota. And I was the music director there. And the program director was this very odd man. I won't mention his name. He was a nice guy, but he's a bit out there. And at the time, I'm 21 years old, 22 years old. And we had a desk calendar on the desk. And he would make me write out everything I had to do every day for months in advance. And if I had a book or my drink sitting on top of that calendar, he would lose his marbles. Because if something's on top of your calendar, how can you see what you have to do? And I'd be like, well, I'm an old enough person that I can move my drink. I just set it down for, he said, don't put anything on your calendar ever. It needs to be visible. And at the time, it was like, this is bonkers. What is this guy's like micromanaging me to the max? But I now understand the value of what he was teaching me.
Did you a giant
Even though as a 22-year-old, I was like, dude, get the heck out of here. You're
this
weirdo.
Is stupid, dude. What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because now I talk to my wife, and if you look over to this side or behind me this way, I got desk calendars and I write things the same way. And again, I use all the digital tools, love technology. I use my Google Calendar. I have all that. But my main five things I have to do every day are always handwritten on my little calendar over there. And I give him credit because he,
by the way, when you write something down, you're more prone to remember it anyway.
Yeah. Especially even back, you know, going back to school, like when you write it, when you hear somebody lecture, I could type it and I'll probably forget it. If I have to write it with my own stroke of my hand, it does settle in deeper and it sort of creates that mind memory that is very prevalent. But again, writing it down, I'm a big fan of the old school crossing things off my list too. So,
well, somehow we're related somehow, and there's probably an uncle that we share, I'm thinking.
I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. And I was going to say, you might have worked for the guy in Winter, South Dakota. He was a big believer in calendars. So there's a lot of truth to it, though. So definitely get in the habit of holding yourself accountable.
There you go. Documenting with discipline. We talk about that every Monday morning on my social channels. Every Monday. I've been saying that for years on social media. Document with discipline.
And to find you on social media, we can go over to LinkedIn or Instagram. You're at the Corey Dissin. That's D-I-S-S-I-N. And obviously, you can find him at his own website, CoreyDissin.com. When we release this episode, I'll make sure that all the links are around there. We'll tag you on social media so you can share with your network. Awesome. But is there anything you want to end with? Any final thoughts that you would share with the audience today? Or just sort of words of encouragement from the master himself, Mr. Corey Dissin?
Well, when you go to my website, you're going to see there's three prominent words that jump right in your face. And those words are go get it. You want something in life? Go get it. Don't talk about it. Go get it. You want to achieve a certain goal, position, status, bank account? Go get it. Too many people talk about it, wish for it, daydream about it. Do the work to go get it. If you've listened to, take one thing away from this, look at me. I'm not a Rhodes Scholar. I don't have an MBA. I'm not a doctor in philosophy. I just outworked every MFer I've ever met. And that's why I have the privilege to be considered to speak on a podcast with a guy like you. Case closed.
Hey, just do it. Nike made it first. Go get it. I like it even better. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. We always find ourselves talking about things and hoping that it'll be given to us or this miracle opportunity will fall in your lap. But the better question to ask is, what have you done to make that outcome a reality for yourself? The answer is nothing, then expect nothing. And if the answer is I knock on doors and I make phone calls and cold outreach people every single day, your consistency will start to pay off. And at some point, you will get that ROI, not just the return on investment, the implementation version.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
My man.
Well, again, guys, check out CoreyDissin.com. Get a copy of it. And I'll use his own term, go get it. the copy of Going the Distance. See a little nice marketing wordplay there.
Yes,
he's got a copy right there.
There you go.
And again, Corey, I really appreciate your time on The Measuring Post. I would love to continue this conversation and bring you back for a follow-up, see how things are going. And obviously, if there's anything that I think we could do for each other, it would be to just network and share. And I really learned a lot just from your sort of mantra and your lifestyle. So again, appreciate you coming on The Measuring Post today.
Absolutely my pleasure, and I'm at your disposal. D-I-S-S-posal. Disposal. Oh,
you've been holding that one the whole conversation. Appreciate you, sir. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, man.